I don't like the look of him. Oompa Loompa Doompa Dee Da. This never happened to Barack Obama. Cover your face in an orangey goo. You look like Oompa Loompa's Doompa Dee Doo.
Meanwhile, it has been another week of headaches for Jabba the Trump. The House Judiciary Committee started formal debate on the articles of impeachment. The House will vote on the articles of impeachment, assuming the vote is to impeach, which it will move to a trial in the Senate. The evidence presented to the Senate will overwhelmingly suggest that the president committed high crimes and misdemeanors. All the Republican senators, except Mitt Romney, will ignore that and vote to acquit. Trump will stay in the White House. We'll watch the Super Bowl and talk about the commercials, and that'll be that.
Democrats decided to exercise restraint and file only two articles of impeachment against Trump, despite the fact that they could have filed many more. I mean, this guy obstructed justice, solicited a bribe, and was literally identified as individual one in a court filing involving an illegal scheme to pay hush money to cover up an affair. And we know individual one was Trump because the document also said individual one began an ultimately successful campaign for president of the United States. That was in a court filing. I mean, think about how crazy that is. That's never happened before. It's not like Abraham Lincoln was ever named in an indictment as honest man in very large hat number one. And yet Trump yesterday actually taunted Democrats for not filing even more charges against him by mocking how limited the articles of impeachment were.
This is the lightest, weakest impeachment. You know, our country's had actually many impeachments. You call judges and lots of many impeachments. But it was on today. Everybody said, this is impeachment light. This is the lightest impeachment in the history of our country by far. It's not even like an impeachment.
Yeah. No, it's exactly like an impeachment. It's an impeachment. It's not a diet impeachment. It's a real, you are about to get impeached, okay? Trump had a lot to say last night. He was shot out of a cannon, so we slowed him down to half speed.
Oh, that's a beautiful new hat. Look at the hat that guy's got on. How's that hat working out? Is that hat good? I love that hat.
Today in the Senate, the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, appeared before the Judiciary Committee. This is the guy who wrote the report that came out this week that said a lot of things, including that Obama never wiretapped Trump Tower, as Trump has claimed. It debunked the president's claim that the FBI investigation into his campaign ties with Russia was a deep state hit job. It was not. The Inspector General, who worked for Trump, by the way, found that none of these conspiracy theories are true and found no evidence of another GOP talking point that the infamous Steele dossier had anything to do with the decision to launch the investigation. The Steele dossier, if you don't know, sounds like a John Grisham novel. Really, it's just a 35-page report about how Russia wanted the host of Celebrity Apprentice to be our president. So stay with me here because it's about to get good. So this report, ordered by Trump and done by his people, did not in any way back up his crazy claims, which is damaging to him. But that's where Senator Lindsey Lohan Graham comes in. Lindsey Graham put on quite a show. First, he demanded to know why investigators didn't tell Trump his campaign was being investigated. Well, I don't know, maybe because his campaign was being investigated? Isn't that how it usually works?
Justice Department Inspector General released his findings. It said that while there were serious errors with parts of the Russia investigation, it was both valid and justified. The only thing Republicans have been able to hang their hat on is the fact that two FBI agents sent text messages to each other disparaging Trump, even though there were also FBI employees who sent pro-Trump and anti-Hillary messages.
Then the Inspector General's shocking report proved that the Obama FBI obtained secret warrants to spy on my campaign. The FBI also sent multiple undercover human spies to surveil and record people associated with our campaign.
Okay, that's a bold claim. However, the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, testified on Capitol Hill today, and his report didn't say what Trump says it said.
Did you find anything where the FBI had planted spies in Mr. Trump's campaign?
We found no use of confidential human sources and placing them in the campaign.
All you have to do is read the transcript. Read the transcript.
Read the transcript. It's all about the transcript.
Read the transcript, right.
Have you read the transcript?
I have not read it.
But we should read the transcript.
We should.
Look at the transcript, right?
Yeah, look at the transcript.
Have you read the transcript? I trust the word of our president. Yeah. Read the transcript, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Did you read the transcript?
I've
I mean, I've read most of it, but there's nothing.
Skim the transcript.
Yeah, I don't have time for, you know, reading all the, you know, impeachment, all that bullshit, you know, but.
How long have you been waiting out here for Donald Trump?
Since 8 o'clock.
Hours. A lot of free time.
Absolutely.
Read the transcript.
Read the transcript.
Yeah.
Did you read the transcript?
I don't have to. Everyone else has. I can read it if I need to, but.
Right, yeah. But it's important that everybody reads the transcript.
It is very important. Pay attention and think for yourself.
Yes. You have, but to be clear, you have not read the transcript.
I haven't, no.
Right. But it is just important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't be a sheep. Think for yourself.
But again, just to be very clear, you have not read it.
I have not read it.
You just trusted somebody else
Correct.
Who read it.
Correct. Yeah.
What were you saying about don't be a sheep?
Don't be a sheep. Think for yourself. Do your own research.
Do your own research. Yeah. Right.
And then they announced there was no buys. Now, I have so many people that come up to me. Thank you, sir. My wife is so in love with me because I went up 79% in the 401k. She thinks I'm a genius. She always thought I was a total stiff, a dumb, stupid dope. Now she thinks I'm a financial genius, sir. And all I did was buy some stock. I have stock in a 401k. And you made me into a genius, sir. She loves me so much more than she ever did. Shows you the power of money, right? Isn't that terrible?
Now, you might recall that since virtually the start of his presidency, Trump has harbored a deranged conspiracy theory that there was a secret cell of treasonous deep state saboteurs within the government trying to take him down, you know, like an insane person. Trump has continued to repeat this conspiracy theory, even though it's already been debunked, including by an inspector general's report on Monday and by the inspector general himself at a hearing today. Now, you might remember that this whole insane conspiracy theory started when Trump tweeted this out of nowhere a few months into his presidency. Terrible. Just found out that Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just before the victory. And then how low has President Obama gone to tap my phones during the very sacred election process? This is Nixon Watergate, bad or sick guy. That was March of 2017, remember? When we thought that was the craziest thing a president ever said? We were so young. Also, I love Trump's parentheticals, bad or sick guy. It's like a choose-your-own-adventure book for insane people. If you think Obama was good, turn to page 10. If you think he was bad, turn to page 27. And if you think he's sick, I'd like to offer you Secretary of Agriculture. Trump's about to face a historic political reckoning for a simple reason. He abused his power, he tried to cover it up, and he got caught. And now, his only move is to spin dark fantasies of subterfuge and paranoia to scare his base and keep them in line. But sometimes, he even undercuts himself. At the rally yesterday, for example, he told his fawning admirers that Democrats were trying to overthrow the government simply by following the impeachment procedures laid out in the Constitution. But in the next breath, he told them it wasn't that big of a deal.
The radical left Democrats and the failed Washington establishment are trying to erase your votes, nullify the election, and overthrow our democracy. Not gonna happen, don't worry about it. I wouldn't lose too much sleep over it.
House Republicans are fighting off impeachment regardless of how it might look in the history books, like Ohio representative and man learning they don't make meat-flavored seltzer, Jim Jordan. Jordan told the Huffington Post, when it comes to future generations, I don't care how I'm remembered.
God, Trump is a loathsome human. Oh, my God, he's an idiot. I cannot believe Donald Trump is likely to be actual serious candidate for president. And, wow, Donald Trump is an enormous douche. Again, a lot of people agree.
He's a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot.
I think he's a kook. I think he's crazy. I think he's unfit for office.
He doesn't represent my party.
He's a jack.
Donald Trump is a political car wreck.
At the end of the day, he would be the most flawed nominee in the history of the Republican Party.
Donald Trump is the most unelectable Republican I've seen in my lifetime.
He would be a terrible commander-in-chief. He doesn't have the temperament or judgment. He's not fit to be president of the United States. Okay. We would get slaughtered as a party if Donald Trump's our nominee, and quite frankly, we would deserve it.
You know how you make America great again? Tell Donald Trump to go to
He jeopardized our national security, and he undermined our democracy.
Abuse of power is the essential impeachment offense. President Trump makes Richard Nixon look like a little leaguer when it comes to obstruction.
Meanwhile, there are signs that this president, who publicly claimed and bluffed that he welcomed impeachment, actually looks like he hates this. This afternoon, Donald Trump unloading with this letter, official on White House letterhead, chock full of exclamation points and all kinds of half-baked grievances. The president claims this process, which of course he boycotted, is actually invalid. He falsely claims that more due process was afforded to those accused in the Salem witch trials. I guess this is the point in the broadcast where I say, because I try to keep it real with you, to be frank, how do you fact check something that is that hyperbolically stupid? Well, briefly, we can note that 20 innocent people were executed during the Salem witch trials for witchcraft. So no, this process is nowhere near that right now, thank goodness.
The president abused his power for his own personal political benefit at the expense of our national security by withholding military aid.
Withholding military aid. Now, as everyone who's followed this knows, the money did ultimately get unfrozen when they got caught. Donald Trump learned that a whistleblower was actually going after this whole plot, and he relented. Now, many Trump supporters have argued, this is very important, you've probably seen this line of argument, that Ukraine ultimately got the money, and that cancels out any impeachable offense.
And the real bottom line is he got the money. Ukraine got the money.
The Ukrainians did nothing to, as far as investigations goes, to get the aid released. So there was never this quid pro quo.
I look at it this way. The aid is there, and the investigations didn't happen. So if there was a quid pro quo, it certainly wasn't a very effective one.
They got the money. Let's take this apart. 2 points. One, it's not a valid legal defense to bribery. In fact, other politicians are in prison today for unsuccessful bribery plots. So Trump's alleged extortion of Ukraine was going on while the money was frozen. That's what made it allegedly extortion. That's number one. But number two, this report also cuts into Trump's defense on the facts, because for all of the talk, like what I just showed you about the White House releasing all the Ukraine money, Trump's actions have denied Ukraine not a dollar or $100,000 or $1 million, but $35 million of that aid. The report noting Pentagon officials confirming Ukraine still has not received $35 million in security assistance yet to be dispersed, meaning those funds, which were approved under U.S. law, have not gone out. This isn't a rounding error. 14% of the entire money has still been denied to Ukraine.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the honey drippers in the house tonight, and they just got back from Washington, D.C. I think they got something they want to say. House. There's a lot
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Toy Hoy! Art Hoy!
Come to see the Shepherd's Play at Presbyterian Church on the corner of 1 and 4th Street in Hudson on Friday, December 20th at 7 o'clock and Saturday, December 21st at 4 o'clock.
The Oberwiffer Shepherd's Play was performed hundreds of years ago in a small Austrian village of Oberwiffer on the River Danube. It is a nativity play told largely from the point of view of three bumbling shepherds who are visited by the Archangel Gabriel. They make their way to Bethlehem in search of the newborn Jesus child. Tradition had it that a group of ordinary citizens would come together each year at Christmas time to perform this play for the town. This year, the Camp Hudson community has come together to put on this play for their friends and neighbors in the city of Hudson. Come and see the Shepherd's Play at the Presbyterian Church, 360 Warren Street in Hudson, on Friday, December 20th at 7 p.m. and Saturday, December 21st at 4 p.m.
Tune in to the WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hear Shepherd's Play of Gipper Hill Hudson on WGXC 90.7.
Hi, I'm here with Dan Shapley here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. And Dan is the Water Quality Program Director of Riverkeeper. Riverkeeper and Dan were just here at the Sanctuary on November 1st to launch their short film, A Living River, and celebrate the end of their sampling season. Dan spoke with the audience after the film was shown about many of the issues that they were concerned with. Dan, what is Riverkeeper?
Oh, thanks, Spencer. Riverkeeper, we're a 50-plus-year-old environmental organization, and our mission is to protect and restore the Hudson River, its tributaries, and the drinking water supplies that rely on those waters. We do that with a combination of tactics. We have a legal team, and it's been a kind of bedrock of the organization for our history to use the laws that are available for citizens to enforce, to protect and restore water quality. And we also have a patrol boat on the water. Captain John Lipscomb takes that boat from New York Harbor all the way up to Troy. That's the tidal portion of the estuary. Goes out as far as Rome on the Mohawk River and up to Fort Edward on the Upper Hudson. And that's to be the eyes and the ears and the voice for the water from the perspective of the water, to get people out and really see and experience what's going on. And then the last part of our organization is the community science, and that's the part of the organization that I work on. So we get people engaged with measuring water quality in the creeks that flow into the Hudson and in the Hudson itself, and use that information as well as the kind of collection of people and the organized the work to organize them to advocate for improved water quality and other issues that are of importance to that group of people who come out and do that work.
Okay, so some of those important issues. You said this year was a landmark year for some legislation. Do you want to speak on that?
Yeah, so we were really, very happy with the Democrats kind of taking over both houses of the legislature. A lot happened in New York, kind of unstuck a lot of things that had been waiting. So we saw landmark climate legislation, a ban on plastic bags, money put into the Clean Water Infrastructure Act, and there were just grants announced today and yesterday that really are focused on improving water quality by improving our pipes, our treatment plants, and things like that. Saw a ban on a toxic pesticide. So a lot of, just tick down the list, just a lot of actions that are really important that'll have some impact over many years to help protect and restore water. But one thing that your listeners could do to help is there's one bill that has been lingering on the governor's desk and it's waiting for a signature, and it would start to ban the use of certain toxic chemicals in firefighting foams. And these chemicals are called PFAS chemicals, P-F-A-S, and they are highly soluble in water. They are called forever chemicals because they just don't go away. And they're highly toxic, many of them that have been studied. And as we study more of them, we find more of them are toxic. So they're basically a perfect water contaminant, unfortunately. And they've contaminated drinking water supplies. These are the family of chemicals affecting Hoosick Falls and Newburgh. So we're looking for that signature on that bill. And people can help by going to riverkeeper.org. And going to the Action Center and sending a message to the governor now, make sure that bill gets signed before the end of this calendar year.
Yeah, I noticed that your online resource makes it really easy to send a really coherent letter to elected officials.
Yeah, we really try to time those too and make sure that they're going to have impact. You know, we don't ask people to take an action if it's not really targeted and strategic. It's not just signing a petition. It's really, you know, something that we feel it can affect change. And we love it to get people involved that way. It's just basic civics, right? This is how our government works. But often that, you know, we play the role of understanding what needs to be done and just being able to communicate to people who care how to take that action. So it's a great place to go to keep up on that. And you can sign up for our emails and get regular updates for how to take those kinds of actions.
So is that at riverkeeper.com?
Riverkeeper.org.
.org. Yeah. So you guys look after the Mohawk and the Hudson. What are some issues with the Hudson that you're looking at this year, this coming year?
Well, one of the things we've been working on the last several years is to organize the communities that draw drinking water from the Hudson River, and that's Poughkeepsie, Rhinebeck, Highland, Hyde Park, Port Ewan, and a lot of people, especially as I get into the Capital District and I'm talking to groups, a lot of people are really surprised and shocked to learn that the Hudson River is a drinking water source because we just don't think of it as we're standing on the banks of the river in Troy or Albany. But 100,000 people rely on the Hudson River for drinking water. So we've been working with the communities that call themselves the Hudson Seven because there's seven municipalities in all that rely on the Hudson River for drinking water. So we're working with them on a number of issues to try and help them protect that source of their drinking water and to get the resources they need to do that. A couple things that are kind of high on the list right now are making sure that a coal tar cleanup that's happening in Poughkeepsie is done in a way that will not imperil the drinking water intakes that are relatively nearby, and also to try to engage the Coast Guard and the EPA in really developing more robust plans to prevent spill from any of the tankers that are using the Hudson as a as a highway. That if there's ever to prevent the spill is obviously the number one goal, because any spill, a dirty little secret about oil spills particularly, is that once there's a spill in water, there's really very little recovered. You see the response and the booms put out in the water and all of the activity to supposedly kind of collect the oil, but once it's there, it's there. So we really want to prevent the spill and make sure that if there is a spill, that we have a really good, robust response ready, because right now it's a real gap. So those are a couple things for the Hudson River and the drinking water that we're really focused on.
Oh, that's great. So is there any issues with the Mohawk that have been going on recently?
Yeah, well, equally as surprising to a lot of people is the Mohawk River is also a source of drinking water for also about 100,000 people in Colony and the city of Cohoes. That's directly the drinking water source. And the village of Green Island also uses it as a backup source. And there are a number of communities that rely on the aquifer that's really integral with the river. As you get out to Schenectady and Glenville, Rotterdam, Niskayuna, Scotia, that area, there's a lot of groundwater. So we're sort of in an earlier phase of just trying to educate people that the river is important for a lot of reasons. And one of them is that it's the drinking water supply. And really just put that on the radar for people so they understand how important those streams running through their communities are that are going into the Mohawk River. If they're not clean, the river's not clean. We have to really focus on the protection of the river for that purpose. And right now we're trying to work with New York Power Authority, which operates two hydroelectric facilities on two dams on the Mohawk River, because they are seeking to relicense those facilities. They need a federal license. Part of that license requires them to study the environmental impacts of having dams and hydro facilities in the river. And people don't always appreciate, but dams have a profound and a really profoundly negative effect on rivers. They turn rivers into lakes. So that free-flowing river is changed utterly when there's a dam in it. The other thing they can do is really affect water quality for places like the Mohawk, that is a drinking water supply. Because in the Mohawk, we have a lot of wastewater discharges and runoff from agriculture. And even when those wastewater discharges are treated, there's a lot of nutrients. And nutrients are a good thing in small amount, but in large amount, they can lead to algal blooms. And dams really, you know, create the conditions that make algal blooms more likely. They allow the water slows down, it pools up. The pollutants can kind of concentrate. So algal bloom in a drinking water supply can lead to water quality problems. It can lead to disinfection byproducts, which are a regulated contaminant. And there is the potential for a harmful algal bloom, which we've been having much more frequently across our whole state. And we will see these in ever-increasing number as climate change takes its toll, because temperature is a key ingredient. So we really want to make sure, as these dams are relicensed, that they study the key variables of water quality that are important to those drinking water supplies. And we're butting heads a little bit with NIPA right now, and we have a comment deadline staring us down on December 22nd. The public can weigh in, and if you want to, there's a website that NIPA has at New York Power Authority for the Vischer Ferry and Crescent Dam. It'll show you how to comment. And the important thing is to tell them, study chlorophyll and nutrients, because those are two key variables for the drinking water supply. And we really want to see make sure that those are fully considered as the dams are relicensed.
Well, that's great. Dan, thank you for coming on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I hope to come back. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
I'm State Party Co-Chair Peter Lavigne. We're here to present our agenda, an agenda to make New York a better, more equitable, and more grassroots democratic state, one in keeping with our eco-socialist principles. And we present these ideas with a sincere hope that they will be imitated and passed this session. The Green New Deal, one of whose authors is here in the room today, has become a rallying cry. And as much as we wish we received some credit, we are glad to have moved the conversation on a life-or-death issue like the climate crisis. Surveying what the 2020 state of the state will likely contain, our ideas are bold where the governors are once again limited and timid. Where Governor Cuomo proposes banning single-use styrofoam containers, which are a good thing, we propose a rapid transition to a 100% renewable energy economy. Where Cuomo talks about combating the opioid crisis by banning fentanyl analogs, we say legalize marijuana, decriminalize other drugs, and treat addiction as a health problem and not a crime. Where the governor calls for mandatory recounts in close elections, we call for deep electoral reforms like ranked choice voting and proportional representation. Where the budget has a $6 billion deficit, we say stop rebating the stock transfer tax, as we've been talking about for the last 15 years, and raise taxes on the wealthy and corporations. So right now I'd like to turn to C.J. Chapman, who's going to discuss single-payer health care and why we absolutely need to pass the New York Health Act this session.
C.J. starts by talking what it's like to be a low-income mom with a toddler and dependent upon Medicaid.
...mother to a toddler and live with aid, and while I'm grateful for that every day, I dread opening each piece of mail we get from DSS because it might be the letter that says we lose our coverage. Meanwhile, my partner has insurance through his employer, but his copays and deductibles are so high that he's essentially paying for a plan that he can't afford to use. Our situation is not unique. Millions across the state are underinsured and unable to get the health care they need due to financial barriers imposed by insurance and pharmaceutical companies. The New York Health Act solves these problems for families like mine by making health care accessible, affordable, and guaranteed, not just for us.
Broadcast over any FM car radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
Throw away your bulky transmitters and broadcasting towers. The Superstar Celebrity Microphone lets you hear your voice through any AM radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
He's in for some loving.
This is At The Row. You're just in WGSC 9.7 FM. 8 Row. Castor. Awesome. Radio is the great thing ever.
WGXE always needs computer donations.
If you have an old one you don't need and it is either a Macintosh 2011 or newer, 2.0 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer, 2.4 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, email info@wgxc.org for more information.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Dan Bunny of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Give me liberty or give me death.
WGXC, the station that gives you liberty.
The impeachment of Donald Trump. This may not be the end of it. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast.
And still I rise, Madam Speaker.
That's Congressmember Al Green, Democrat of Houston, in his opening statement during the House hearing on the impeachment of President Donald Trump. Those words taken from Maya Angelou's poem, Still I Rise.
You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still like dust, I'll rise.
Maya Angelou died 5 years ago, but was very present in the House chamber during the historic impeachment hearing. Later in the proceedings, Congressmember Maxine Waters opened her fiery remarks.
Unfortunately, the rules of debate won't allow me to cite all of the reasons why this president should be impeached. There are many. However, Madam Speaker, members of this House, to quote the late Maya Angelou, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time.
Al Green and Maxine Waters, both prominent African-American members of Congress, have been leading the drive for impeachment. Green first brought impeachment to the House floor in May 2017. Within days, he was receiving racist death threats. One caller left a voicemail that threatened, "You ain't gonna impeach nobody, you bleep. Try it, and we'll lynch you all, you bleep. You'll be hanging from a tree." Green has managed to get a vote on impeachment three times. In December 2017, 57 members of Congress joined him. Less than 2 months later, the number climbed to 65. Last July, 94 members of Congress voted with him. Congressmember Waters is among the first members of Congress to call for Trump's impeachment and has done so tenaciously. Al Green delivered his remarks Wednesday beside a large poster bearing the phrase, "Impeach Now," and the image of a young Honduran girl crying as her mother is being searched by Customs and Border Protection in June of 2018. The iconic photo of Sandra Maria Sanchez and her daughter Yanela went viral, capturing the cruelty of Trump's harsh immigrant detention policy. Congressmember Green said on the House floor Wednesday,
"I rise because I love my country, and Madam Speaker, shall any man be beyond justice? This is the question posed in 1787 by George Mason at the Constitutional Convention."
The Houston congressmember continued,
"In the name of democracy, on behalf of the Republic, and for the sake of the many who are suffering, I will vote to impeach, and I encourage my colleagues to do so as well. No one is beyond justice in this country."
On December 4th, Congressmember Green sent a memo to members of Congress that opened, "How will history judge this Congress that passed a resolution indicating President Trump made harmful, racist comments If it does not impeach him for his impeachable, racist, anti-Semitic, Islamophobic, transphobic, xenophobic language, instigating enmity and inciting violence within our society, Congressmember Green asked. Donald Trump is only the third president in the country's history to be impeached, along with Andrew Johnson in 1868 and Bill Clinton in 1998. Neither Johnson nor Clinton was ultimately removed from office by a vote in the Senate. Richard Nixon faced impeachment in the House and removal from office by the Senate in 1974, but opted to resign instead to avoid that certain outcome. While Congressmember Waters, along with Al Green and many others, have a long list of Trump's offenses they consider impeachable, the House Democrats settled on just two: abuse of power related to his attempts to pressure Ukraine to dig up dirt on his political rival Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden, and the obstruction of Congress's investigation into that abuse of power.
Am I satisfied?
That's Al Green speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour Wednesday morning, hours before Trump's impeachment hearing began.
I am at a point wherein I believe that we must go forward with these articles of impeachment. I do not believe that the Constitution prohibits additional articles of impeachment.
Green represents a majority-minority district in southwest Houston. He continued on Democracy Now!
If Andrew Johnson could be impeached in Article 10 of the Articles of Impeachment against him, for reasons rooted in his hatred, his bigotry, and racism, this president can be impeached for these reasons as well.
At this point, it seems clear the Republican-controlled Senate will acquit Trump of articles of impeachment, and he'll remain in office. But that doesn't deter Congressmember Al Green.
This may not be the end of it. I don't say that it is or is not. I do say that the Constitution allows us to impeach a president multiple times if the president commits multiple impeachable acts.
I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Thank you.
That was 2019 new music from Matmos. The song is called Silicone Gel Implant. It's February. The world is wearing shorts. The world is wearing a tart on its sleeve. There's bad news to report, but the president can't read. Here comes a judge. Here comes a preacher. That was Catskill's Amy Rigby with The President Can't Read, a 2019 release. Next up, we hear from Athens jazz performer Chris Pazin. His album, Ornetticut, was released in 2019, and it includes Pazin himself on trumpet, Carl Berger on vibraphone and piano, Ingrid Serster on vocals, Harvey Sorgan on drums, Michael Bizio on bass, and Adam Siegel on alto saxophone. This track is called When Will the Blues Leave? The composer is Ornette Coleman, and the band leader is Chris Pazin from Athens.
They are bad. When? How? And where? Can one overcome the needs of life? Music expands the relationship of one's love existence through its nature of sound. Sadness, pain, anger, joy are not without the effects of music. Change it can bring about.
From 2019, that was Athens jazz artist Chris Payson from his Ornetticut album. The song was called When Will the Blues Leave? That was the band A Winged Victory for the Sullen with The Slow Descent Has Begun from their 2019 release, The Slow Descent Has Begun.
I was born March 4th, 1903, near Union City, Kentucky, in Madison County. My parents had 5 children in 9 years, 3 boys and 2 girls. In 1910, we moved from Union City to Brookstown, which is near Red House. I started in a one-room school that was heated by a large coal heater in the middle of the room, with double desks, 2 or 3 sitting together in the seat. It had a large recitation bench up in front where we sat when having class. All 8 grades were taught in this room with just 1 teacher. Most of the time, the teacher made the fires, swept the floors, and straightened up the room before any of the children arrived. Some of the girls and boys in the upper grades would help with the ones in the lower grades. After graduating in 1921, I taught a 3-month spring school at Brookstown. In a spring school, the parents paid the teacher $3 a month for each pupil. Certificate. I taught the first 4 grades at Red House School for 2 years, then taught 1 year in high school. That year, my youngest brother and sister went to school with me, and they graduated that year. In the fall of 1927, I went to Benham in Harlan County. There were 130 children in the first grade, so the class was divided with 2 teachers. They were building a new school building. And as we didn't have enough room, one teacher taught half of them from 8 to 12, and I taught the other 65 from 12:30 to 4. In January 1928, I got married. Out that year, then quit teaching to raise our family. In 1933, we moved from Harlan County to Stanford in Lincoln County. We have 1 son and 4 daughters. In 1956, I returned to teaching as a substitute. Then in 58, I taught the first 4 grades in a 2-room school in Roland. In 59, I came back to Union City to teach in the same building that my mother had begun her teaching career many years ago. And in the spring of 60, they gave me the principal's job. City, and in 1962 the school was consolidated with the Red House School.